Welcome to The Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor. It's been great having you for this first season of the show. We'll be back for a second season in a few months. So this is a great chance to catch up on the episodes you missed and share them with someone else in your life. Today, I thought I'd update you on what happened with some of the people you've heard from and give you a little peek inside the process of conflict coaching. I'm here with my producer, Julie, who's been through all of this with me during the past season.
Hey, Emily. I am so glad that we're having this quick chat because I've been thinking as I've been in every single one of these sessions, there are so many questions that I have for you about how this works. But first of all, I am dying to know how things have gone for some of the people that we've heard from this season. Can you give us some insight?
Sure. It's always actually, you always wonder how did things go. So I reached out to Jeff, you may remember in episode 9. Mm. He was the one who was really struggling with his high conflict work and then setting some boundaries.
Right, the whole work-life balance issue for him.
Exactly. So I just reached out to him on, you know, Messenger, and I got back a text that basically said, hey, I'm on a Mediterranean cruise, so... You know, I'll get back to you when I'm back. But he said that it's actually been going well. The fact that he responded was a little bit like, hey, you still responded. But the second part was, I'm not going to give you the full update. So I thought that was a good sign.
Yeah. I mean, I guess baby steps is what we're looking at there.
Yeah.
He took the vacation. He's also still responding to texts.
Exactly. So that was a good direction.
Excellent. What else? Who else can you update us about?
I thought it'd be interesting to talk about Morgan. So she was the one with a strange sister. There was the family group chat where she'd already had a brother that had been estranged from the family. And then her sister, who she was actually really close to, basically was taking a hiatus from the rest of the family.
Right. She'd gotten offended by something that had been said in the family group chat.
Exactly.
Right.
So we had kind of talked through all the different options. And in the end, she had kind of circled back to this idea of like, I just need to show her love. So what actually she ended up doing was she reached out that day after we had done a coaching session, and she had sent a gift basket through Amazon, and her sister called her immediately after that, and they had a great chat. The friend, you know, it was repaired, they're back in contact, and their friendship is actually probably better.
Oh, so. That's so great, because it had been a couple of months, and she was really agonizing about, my sister won't take my texts, she won't return my calls. So you're saying that after the conversation, after the coaching session, she sent the gift basket with a note?
Yeah, so she sent a note, but it was just simply like, hey, I miss you. It wasn't
none of
hey,
the like, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, or I wasn't, you know, here's where I'm coming from.
Exactly.
None of that.
Yeah. And that was the main gist of that whole coaching session was, you have your reasons for feeling hurt, but if you want to mend, the initial part is to show that you care. And showing that caring immediately, she gotten back in touch with her sister. But she was really close with her sister before, so that's why it was especially painful.
Yeah.
And then it worked out.
And now that's so great to hear, I'm sure. Okay, so Emily, I remember in this session, as you were talking her through how she was going to try to, what she could say in that initial contact to her sister. And she was really stuck for a period of time. And we should tell people, like, these coaching sessions go on for an hour at least, often an hour and a half. So we're condensing, but there was probably at least an hour of this session where she was pretty sure that what she needed to do was figure out how to justify herself to her sister. And it felt to me like as a fly on the wall that you were trying to steer her away from that without telling her that's a bad idea.
Well, I think most people come to a coach or, you know, a therapist wanting someone, an expert, to tell them what to do.
Yes.
But I think—
Solve my conflict, please.
Exactly. Well, something, I mean, very essential to what we've been trying to do on the show is to show that the coach's role is to help clarify, structure, and help reflect back the values and interests of the person who's being coached. So my job, you know, is not to tell her what to do, because I've seen it so many times in mediation and in coaching. If I suggest something directly, the person may catch on to that idea, but say when they leave, they either don't implement it, or they implement it poorly, or just it doesn't work. They actually blame me, when I feel like any person, any human being, we're here actually to learn how to make decisions. Mm. And you don't feel satisfied unless you've gone through the work of coming to your own conclusion. So I actually don't want to rob someone of that, but I will structure things in a way to reflect back and have someone think through what that might lead, like the consequences of certain choices.
Yeah.
So that is, I'm not totally neutral in terms of process.
You are trying to guide them sometimes toward maybe what you think would be a more productive approach.
Yes, and maybe to think through something. Most of us have already done a lot of good thinking about why we're justified.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to offer something that maybe hasn't been done yet. Does that make sense?
Oh,
like,
right.
I think we're pretty used to justifying ourselves. So I want to shift someone to think through the possibility that maybe self-justification might not be the only option.
Yeah.
It may be an option in certain situations, but I think in that situation in particular, it was not the best route.
So how often in a coaching session do you sort of have an ideal outcome or kind of like, it's pretty clear to you what the best approach might be or the more productive approach might be, but you're not going to say it.
I would actually say, to be honest, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Hmm. Like say the session we did with Tyler where he was living – as a couple, there were two couples – he was living with his wife, with his sister and her husband.
Right. And that was the house, like two yeah. young couples sharing a house with common areas together. And
yeah.
And he was frustrated that his sister, who is younger than him and deals with a lot of anxiety, and he was frustrated that his sister wasn't like doing chores, wasn't keeping the kitchen clean.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. like maybe an obvious thing would be like, hey, let's have a group council and talk about who does the dishes. But what was interesting, I actually was very surprised in that one because what resulted was this idea of he needed to actually build a relationship with his sister.
Right.
I don't know if you remember in that episode, but when I asked him, I said, when's the last time you've done something just with your sister? And I think he said it was like a few years.
Right.
It was something.
They'd had a one-on-one.
Yeah, it was kind of like the mic drop moment where you're like, whoa. Like I was thinking maybe like, you know, a few months or something like that. But when he said 3 years, that actually was surprising to me too. But when he said that, then for him, it became pretty obvious, oh, I need to cultivate a relationship with my sister intentionally, just the two of us. And so, I mean, again, sometimes, like with Morgan, for me, I guess because I have dealt with estrangement to a yeah. certain extent, I think I already had in mind a little bit of where I thought it might be helpful to go. But then there's plenty of other situations where I don't have all the background on those relationships. So what I might have suggested really might not work or
yeah.
might not be helpful at that point. So
do you have an update on Tyler? Like, how's he doing with his sister?
Oh, Tyler's actually doing great. So he texted me and said that while he doesn't necessarily – at the end of that session, he had said, well, maybe we'll go out to, you know, lunch
to
or
lunch,
dinner.
Right.
So that didn't end up happening, but his sister ended up – well, she must have been pregnant, like, or shortly thereafter gotten pregnant. But she just had a baby girl. And because they're living together, he now has this opportunity to help out with the baby.
Mm.
So they end up talking with each other, and he ends up helping her in pretty intimate settings. So what he said, I mean, his biggest takeaway was just the idea that, hey, I have to be intentional. I can't just say, oh, because we're siblings, we should be close and have that expectation. He now sees, oh, just by situation with this baby, I'm seeing that I'm having all this intentional interaction with her and I'm choosing to help her with her baby. So we're growing closer. So I think that was a big takeaway from that one in particular.
I wonder if that's helping at all with the like housekeeping though, or if it's only just made it worse.
Well, when you have a little baby, maybe the housekeeping isn't the highest priority, but at least for him, maybe there's a more trust because he's spent a lot more time with her. I don't know if you remember how they just hadn't been talking much
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
So now they are more connected. So maybe those conversations might come up more naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like it's a place that you often end up with people. The same thing was true with Sarah, another one that we heard from this season. I think she was in episode 10. This was the woman who had the coworker, and they were having some conflict in their relationship. But it seems like frequently these sessions kind of land in a place that says, oh, yeah, you have this conflict, but step one is to work on the relationship rather than on the conflict. Which I guess is obvious, but it always seems like a surprise when we land there in the session.
Well, I think it's because, Julie, it takes so long to get there. So we have joked throughout the season, like emptying the closet. Like you're pulling – like people yeah. – people usually present a conflict with something they think is kind of like appropriate. Again, they're coming on the radio, so maybe it's just like, okay, is this kind of worthy of talking about yeah. or it needs to be kind of finite? But then once you've emptied the closet, meaning like gotten out all of those details, it usually is – sometimes you go directly to that actual topic that set things off. But if these are the interpersonal relationships that really matter to someone, you've had a lot of different experiences. Mm-hmm. So say, for example, Erica. So Erica was our first coaching session that we ever did. And she presented with this like mealtime feeding of her young daughters
right.
and how she and her husband were having, you know, kind of this conflict over, do they have to finish their food before they can get something else, before they can leave the table? And Erica actually mentioned that she felt kind of stupid coming.
It seems so trivial.
Yeah, it seemed like a really trivial conflict. But once we uncovered the need, so people present often with the thing that they like, the situation, the context of the dinner. But what was really happening was this idea, I really want my daughters to have autonomy. Mm. And this daily reminder that my daughters are maybe not getting to exercise autonomy is causing all this friction with her husband. So once she uncovered the need, and that's basic to any coaching or mediation. If you uncover a need, then you can actually brainstorm lots of options to kind of meet that need.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So Erica was another one I was thinking of because, like mm-hmm. you said, this was the very first session mm-hmm. that we recorded. It was my first time sitting in any kind of conflict coaching. And I'm expecting you to help her figure out, well, what are you willing to put up with? How could you maybe come up with a joint solution? And then all of a sudden you ask her, like, what is your need in this? And I remember thinking, well, duh, her need is that her husband agreed with her or like changes behavior. Like that's the need. Mm-hmm. And as you were just alluding to, it's something different or deeper. But this is a question that you ask, it seems to me, in every coaching session, kind of once the closet has been emptied. So talk to me a little bit more about what it is that you're actually trying to help them get to when you say, what is your need here?
Sure. I think we're very aware when we experience a conflict of our feelings, the other people involved, and a little bit like what we want other people to do so that we feel settled again. But we're not very good at verbalizing why we want things done in that certain way.
Right.
So I could say, hey, I want you to take the trash out, you know, by 5 p.m., even if the trash doesn't get, you know, taken by the garbage men at, you know, until the next day at 7. My need may be, hey, that like I need to know that that's going to happen at a certain time. I just maybe want a little control or I have anxiety, but I may try to force the issue about it happening at 5, but that doesn't really get at the other person is like, why 5?
Right.
So if I can learn in myself to understand what my need is, and then I can actually articulate to the other person why I want this thing, they can begin to put themselves a little bit in my shoes. Hmm. Be like, oh, I felt anxiety before, or I've had super busy nights where I don't remember to take the trash out or I have something really early in the morning. It's just as much as possible. So this is – it's based on nonviolent communication, but the probably the most influential book I've read on conflict resolution. But the idea is if I can identify a need and I can – accurately express it to you without making you defensive, I'm much more likely to be able to connect with you and actually have my need filled. And I think it's just a lot of us, we get frustrated because we keep telling people what we want them to do, but the other people don't really know why we want them, why we should do this thing.
What I think is interesting though is that, so my logical brain says you communicate the why so that they will logically understand it and do it. But that misses the piece you just mentioned, which is the connect. So we're communicating the why so that they can see the human in us. They can see the vulnerability in us, ideally, which means that the why needs to go deeper than logic. Like, well, because 4 times out of 5, we're busy after 5 o'clock and we forget. the why needs to be closer to our heart, like it was with Erica. And that's the piece that then makes them more likely to comply or collaborate or something with us,
yes.
Right?
Or at least it begins a conversation that's about something real. So say, for example, if we go back to Erica's situation, if she just went in to negotiate with her husband about why they should power share their parenting, like it could be that whole situation could have been construed as, hey, I'm staying at home with the kids. I cook their food all day.
I should be able to say
yeah,
how to
like
eat.
You're gone all day. I know best. Like, yeah. I'm around them. She could have thought her need, like if she, like one need could be like power or respect.
Mm-hmm.
But when we accurately identified that it wasn't really about power, but it was actually about autonomy and wanting to pass that down to her daughters when maybe she had not experienced that herself. Mm-hmm. And that was a particular fear that her daughters might experience what she had also experienced that she didn't like. That's a really different conversation with her husband. She ended up actually, like as an update, she ended up talking to him that night and they connected because it wasn't about, hey, husband, you're a bad husband.
Mm-hmm.
You make me feel like I have no power because you're telling me what to do and you're contradicting what I want to do with my kids. Instead, she's saying, you know what? I feel so passionately and I like care so much that our daughters have autonomy. And then they could have a conversation and actually a brainstorm probably over the rest of their, you know, children's lives.
Hmm.
What does autonomy look like? Maybe, you know, ages 3 and 5, autonomy is about what they eat. But eventually it's going to be what classes they choose, you know, who they date, when they, you know, what time they come back at night, all those things. So it's starting this pattern of, I really care about our, you know, our daughter's autonomy. And I want to talk with you about that. I don't want to compete with you, but I actually want to collaborate on it. And that's a really different conversation.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I think has been most surprising, the skills, the takeaways that I've had from a number of episodes, and I've actually talked to some people who also bring this up, is this you frequently talk about mirroring the communication or the approach that the other person is using in a conflict, which I think the first time we heard about this was with Logan, and he had the neighbor, and he thinks that person-to-person, face-to-face is more effective, and it's going to be, you know, so his neighbor texts him, and then he, like, goes and knocks on the door, and it creates, additional conflict or kind of amplifies the conflict. And your advice was to think about mirroring, you know, if they prefer face-to-face or if they don't prefer face-to-face or if they're reaching out by text or if they're calling or if they want to have conversations when you're side-by-side rather than face-to-face or whatever, to be cognizant of that and to mirror it, even if it's not necessarily the way I think effective communication happens. That's just really surprising to me that, I mean, everybody knows face-to-face is better than text. The end, right? And that you're saying, actually, there's other things to consider.
Yeah, I think that's where my role or my identity as a developmental psychologist kind of weaves in here. Because I think people, again, this is collaborating. If I'm face-to-face, I'm collaborating with you, we're sharing ideas. But that's not everybody's comfort level. It's actually not all their skill level either.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, developmentally, I have a couple children on the autism spectrum, and that's actually the last thing that will work. It actually will backfire and exacerbate the issue. So I do a lot of parallel play, meaning parallel play with adults. Let's go do something. Let's go take a walk. Let's have lunch together. Let's watch a show. But there's something side by side. And then when someone feels safe, then they'll start to talk to you. Hmm. So kind of love languages wise, even if you get into that, is the idea you're trying to understand how the other person experiences the world and trying, again, if you're trying to connect, I guess if you're wanting to resolve a conflict, like you were saying, you got to try to make some connection first so that that's even possible. Like there's steps to getting to the conflict resolution.
I appreciate that you're willing to be vulnerable about the conflicts in your own life as well. So I'm really curious if there's one skill that we talked about from this season that is like the Achilles heel for you, the one that's really hard for you to kind of stay on top of.
I'm breathing, pausing for a moment. I think probably the biggest takeaway for me, especially being a trained professional in this area, is it's one thing to help people through their conflicts. It's kind of like a medical doctor, you know, triaging, figuring out what this other person needs to do and applying those skills. I had a conflict even this week. And in the moment, I myself did not know exactly what I wanted to do. Mm. It wasn't necessarily what I should do or what, you know, I could do. It was more, what do I want to do?
And what is my need here?
Yeah. And there's a choice, like there's a range of needs that could be addressed, but I actually still need to take time to think through what I actually want. Hmm. Because anytime you try to resolve conflict, you're shifting the relationship. Like the other person may not want to resolve it, or they may not be ready. They may not like what you say. So kind of like the studying it out, that still always is a thing, no matter how much conflict I encounter in my life, in my own life, I still have to be mindful of taking the time to consider what my needs are. Because other outsiders, they can make guesses, but I'm actually still the expert on what I need. And so to take the time is probably always necessary.
I want to talk about role-playing for just a moment.
Sure.
One of the people, you did this with a bunch of people in the season, but I remember Sarah was one of them that you did with this, with where you asked her to take the voice of her coworker, who she mm-hmm. felt was being unfairly critical and shutting down her ideas. And there was this like snippiness that was really upsetting to her. And it was a peer coworker. And the role playing is awkward.
Like it is.
People don't enjoy doing it.
It is awkward.
So I'm curious, is that something you do in most coaching sessions? And how do you decide if you're going to have them take the voice of the other person, like try to get inside their head, versus like with Elizabeth, you were just having her rehearse. You were role playing, but she was herself kind of figuring out how she wanted to say what sure. she wanted to say to her coworker.
I think with Sarah, the reason why I had her take the position of her coworker was she had couched a little bit of what she said about her coworker. She said it a couple times, like, I can't speak for her. She was actually very gracious about right. saying, like, why would I want to take her, like, speak on her behalf mm-hmm. in terms of, like, I could be very wrong.
Right.
But we were having trouble actually getting at what possible perspective her coworker could have on the relationship. There was just kind of this impasse of, I don't know where she's coming from. There was an inkling of the tension was real. She could feel the conflict, but the reasons why there was a conflict, she just couldn't get at. And she was pretty hesitant. She was totally game to do it, but she was hesitant to take the voice of her coworker.
Right.
And what was funny is even after she did it a little bit, she still was like, oh, this is weird. But what came out from the role play, specifically, we talked about credentials and some of the insecurities that might be possible that the coworker was experiencing.
Yeah.
And we did not get any of that despite all these efforts to, like, through questions,
right.
talking about it.
Right. Like when she was talking as her coworker, she was saying, I'm really stressed because our boss has been out sick and then he's
yes.
been. And I was like, wait, why didn't she say any of this before?
Yes.
During the emptying of the closet.
Yes.
That was really interesting.
Yes.
Just by nature of then like putting on the, like stepping into the shoes.
Yes.
It's just this, I don't know, it's just forces you a little bit further to kind of get past the, like, I don't know why she's doing what she's doing, and try to get creative maybe about what might be behind their behavior.
I'm not like the expert in all the psychology of identity, but I do mm-hmm. think that our brains are wired to give reasons for our own actions.
Mm.
That's just kind of, that's the general way we present ourselves. So if there's just even some awkward methods of, hey, conditions have changed, you're now, you know, this person, trying to imagine actually does, I think, make us a little more creative. So again, when she said, you know, about the stresses that she had had, that completely changed the information that we had to then talk about it. Interestingly, actually as an update to Sarah's situation. So at the end of our session, she had said, hey, we have a conference coming up. I'm going to try to do some nice things for her. So Sarah actually reached out to her, and the coworker didn't get back to her for like 3 days.
Really?
But there was a piece of information which Sarah didn't explain in full in the update, but kind of it clarified from their mutual boss a little bit about their relationship. So Sarah's inklings that there were real tensions were justified, and she was pretty upset actually based on what she learned from their common boss about how she had been treated in many different situations. So her anxiety and like kind of disgruntled feeling had grown, but she still reached out to Sarah, not in just a gesture for friendship, but to clarify.
To be
things.
Like, hey, can we talk this through? Things are tense. Something
kind
like
of,
that.
Yeah. Okay. She and then so they have this dinner, and again, Sarah is, you know, trying to, you know, share her side and some of her concerns. The coworker refuses to even touch it, you know, says, oh, you know, I'm fine. But after 10 minutes, finally brings up a concern. So Sarah said actually what was really helpful is they aired their concerns. They talked through their differences. It wasn't a fun conversation, but they actually got it out. And then they came up with a little bit of a plan about what would help each other feel comfortable. And they're actually on a good trajectory. And then Sarah said, so she has a little bit more confidence that she could bring up something in a productive way and work through it. And they still can get along working with each other, even if they don't like work perfectly together.
Yeah.
So that confidence piece is like, I think a huge part of what I was hoping, even like doing this show, was just saying, hey, like everybody has conflict. You're going to have all different people in your lives, but you can do something about it. And you actually, if you work through it, if the other person, you know, will work with you, you're actually going to feel closer, and you're also going to feel more confidence. It's not as scary. Once you've worked through conflict, you know, many times, it just becomes kind of like, oh, okay. Like, it's not fun, but I would say it's a lot less scary, and it's a lot less of like a monster. It's more just like, okay, like, we got to do this, and let's see what we can do. Just more pragmatic that way.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to see what you're going to cover in season two.
Yeah. Hey, it's going to be a surprise for me too. So thanks so much. And listeners, I've loved having you along for the season. We've built the show so you can listen to the episodes in any order and learn skills that you can apply to any conflict in your life. I even heard from one listener who goes episode by episode with a friend of hers, and then they get together and discuss it. I'd love to hear how you're using the podcast. Send an email to conflictcoach@byu.edu. I'd also be grateful if you'd leave a 5-star review of Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily Taylor on Apple Podcasts, and maybe share the show with someone in your life who might enjoy it. I'll be back with a new season in a few months. Until then, follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Conflict Coach with Dr. Emily for more insights on handling conflict with confidence. I hope you'll join me.